It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Mann.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. We'll get to your Twitter comments in just a little bit. And we're, of course, taking your calls, like I mentioned, at 201-939-4513. John Schmelk, Lance Mann, Big Blue Kickoff Live is the New York Giants getting ready to take on the Carolina Panthers down in North Carolina, trying to get their first win of the regular season. And Lance, talked to Mark Herzlich yesterday, who had an interview on the radio pregame show on 101.1 WCBS-FM, which starts at 11:30 on Sunday morning, and he called this game a must-win. Let's be honest, we talked about the stat on Monday. In the last four seasons, no team that has started the season 0-2 have made the playoffs. Historically, that number percentage-wise goes way down after 0-3. This is a game the Giants need, and generally speaking, they're the better team in terms of talent.
They are, and considering that Carolina's secondary is really banged up and beat up, they are suffering from that injury bug. I mean, their front seven is impressive. They do have the ability to get pressure on the quarterback, but this is a game, to me, John, that plays right into the hands of the Giants' passing game. And the passing game has been the bright spot for the Giants. The one thing that you can make the argument that has gone well for Big Blue the first 2 weeks has been at least their ability to throw down the field and get the wide receivers and the tight ends involved. But they've got ways to go. They've got to get this running game going. They've got to do better job in pass protection. This, to me, is not only a game, John, that they need to win, but this is a game that you want to start building some momentum. You mentioned that the numbers are not good when you start off 0-2 to begin with, but getting to 1-2 is not necessarily the end-all, be-all. They need to bounce back with a winning streak here, and the only way to do that is to gain some momentum.
And you mentioned the injury problems in the secondary for the Carolina Panthers. Let's go through the list. They already lost Charles Godfrey, their starting safety, to the year in week one with a, I believe it was a ACL, MCL tear. He blew out his knee, and then they pick up Quentin Michael to try to back him up. He's really been one of the better players. He has not practiced all week with an ankle injury. DJ Moore has not practiced all week with a knee injury. He's a swing guy, can play corner and safety. Josh Norman and Josh Thomas, two of the cornerbacks, were limited in practice yesterday with a thigh injury, and Josh Thomas with that concussion. Looks like he's going to play on Sunday. And then James Dockery with the thumb and the shoulder, he did not practice, one of their newly acquired cornerbacks. So you mentioned they're very banged up in the secondary, something they're going to have to figure out. But here's the trick. If the Giants give Eli Manning time, they can take advantage of it. Here's the issue. The Panthers do have a very strong front seven. They get after the quarterback with Hardy and Johnson at the ends. They have star Lotu Lele at tackle who can get after the quarterback a little bit. They have to protect Eli Manning, and that's been a problem so far this year.
It has. I mean, he's seen tons of pressure come right at him each and every game, and I think to Eli Manning's credit, John, he's done a great job in eluding that pressure and still being able to throw down the field, and that's something that may have to continue. The positive is this is the second straight week that they're going to have the five same guys on that offensive line play with one another, so hopefully that's a step in the right direction. You would assume as we get into the heart of the season, as these weeks progress, you know, this offensive line gets reacclimated with each other and that the pass protection improves, and you would hope that the running game improves as well, because you know, that's another important element that clearly is getting plenty of attention because they're not a balanced offense. Eli Manning has numerous interceptions because he's been throwing the ball 45 to 50 times. So I think that has to come to an end despite the fact that Carolina's secondary is banged up.
No doubt about it. 201-939-4513. A lot to go through in this game. Offense, defense, the Giants are pretty healthy. Had a couple injuries at practice yesterday. The most significant, Corey Webster, did not practice that hip injury. The only guy really that's a surprise or of consequence, Ryan Nassib, he's not going to be active anyway. We know about David Deal and Adrian Robinson. So Those are the things you got to worry about if you're the Giants. We'll talk about everything else as we take your calls at 201-939-4513. Charles is in North Carolina. He will lead us off this morning. Charles, good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm in Charlotte, so I'm from here, man. So I will be at the game.
Very good.
Sunday. But I think it goes back, you know, John, hey, I've been saying it for weeks now, man. My main problem with this Giants team and what's scary about this weekend's game is the lack of linebackers. And the Panthers run the ball, or they have the potential to run the ball very effectively. I think that has something to do with the pass rush as well. I think Perry Fuel is trying to protect the lack of linebackers underneath with his, you know, it seems like the DNs are not pulling their ears back and going straight after the quarterback. It's almost like they're playing a balanced technique to where they're going after the quarterback, but they're guarding against the run as well, versus a team like the Panthers, who have great linebackers, and they're just pulling their ears back. And if it's a run, they have protection that's protecting them behind, you know, that front line of defense. They're just pulling their ears back, man, Johnson and Hardy. They're just going after the quarterback every play. Again, I think with this team, with Tuck and Kiwanuka, JPP, and all these guys, I think that because of the lack of the second line of defense, they're playing more of a balanced approach versus just saying, hey, we're going after the quarterback after every snap. We're going to pull our ears back. We're going. They're not doing that. It's kind of like they're standing up at the line and kind of trying to decipher what the play is going to be. What are you guys' opinion on that? And I'm listening on my phone, so I'm not at home, but I'm on the road, so if I can listen in. But my other thing is, what do you guys? How do you feel about the Eli, as far as pressing too much, you know, in the first two games?
Well, I'll go on the defensive line. I'll let Lance take the Eli question. I'm not buying it, to be honest with you. I'm not going to blame the linebackers for the lack of pass rush. You got to get after the quarterback. Look, on 3rd and 9 or 2nd and 9, 3rd and 10, I realize quarterbacks have been getting rid of the ball quickly. The Giants have not gotten enough pressure on the quarterback in obvious passing situations. It's not like the Dallas Cowboys ran the ball all over this Giants team. They had plenty of opportunities to get Tony Romo in the 2nd and 3rd and long, get after the quarterback. They didn't do it. They had enough opportunities in the first half in game 2 against the Broncos when they didn't run the ball too well in that first half to get after Peyton Manning. They couldn't do it. So I'm not in the business of making excuses for these guys, mostly because when you're in the locker room, they don't make any excuses. So why should I? To me, they got to do a better job getting after the quarterback. Kiwanuka has been virtually silent this year. Justin Tuck's been active, and JPP, by his own admission, hasn't been himself just yet. So they need to play better. Whether it's a rush from the outside or even from the tackles in the inside, they got to get to the quarterback.
Well, I think the defensive tackles has stood out more than the defensive ends, John, because Cullen Jenkins and Sean Rogers at least have made their presence felt on the opposing quarterbacks. The problem is they just haven't been able to finish. And I think they definitely need to get more pressure on the quarterback, but I would make the argument that there's been times where they have gotten enough pressure. The problem is they haven't been able to complete the play. So that's something else that needs at least to be taken into consideration. As far as Charles's second question regarding whether or not Eli Manning is pressing the envelope, I think the answer is yes in late game situations, but the only reason he's doing that is because they're down by 2 touchdowns and he's trying to make something out of nothing often, where he's trying to throw up a ball and hope that his receiver can beat out the corner in a jump ball situation. So you have to at least put things in perspective when you're looking at the amount of interceptions that Eli Manning has. During the course of the game, I wouldn't necessarily make the argument that he's pressing the envelope. I would say that's happening more often than not in the fourth quarter, John.
Yeah, no doubt about it. When he sees no help from the running game, and he sees the defense giving up a fair amount of points, a lot of those because of either turnovers by the offense or, of course, special teams breakdowns. We've talked about that all week long as well. The quarterback is going to have the tendency to try to make plays down the field even when they aren't there. And that's why when everyone called in this week and was killing Eli with the turnovers, which is understandable, 7 turnovers in 2 games from one of your players is unacceptable. Don't disagree with that. But the circumstances of the game have put Eli in the situations, to have the opportunity to throw those interceptions.
And also, when you look at the 7 interceptions, this is something we talked about earlier in the week, only about four of them he's technically responsible
That's
for.
That's a lot.
That were bad throws. No, it is a lot, and I'm not trying to make excuses for him. But if you're looking at this Broncos game, the one to me that stands out that was a real killer is the one late in the first half when they could have at least got a field goal. That was a bad decision on the part of Eli Manning. A fluky kick ball. I mean, that could happen to just about anybody. Yep. And the late ones gets back to Charles' point where he was throwing it down the field in the fourth quarter because they were trying to get points on the board at that point.
201-939-4513. Andrew's in New Jersey. Andrew, what's going on?
Yeah, the only one was the Dallas one against the, you know, when the big guy, is it Andre?
DeMarcus Ware.
Yeah.
Well, actually, he had two bad ones against Dallas, Andrew. That was a bad one. And then he airmailed the pass to Reuben Randall. That was a bad one, too.
But last night it was odd because I was rooting for Andy Reid, and he helped us out, and he looks better in green. Andy Reid, he looked like a big tomato, like a big ripe tomato. But he's a great coach, and we have to play them next week, right?
Correct.
So that'll be a great battle, but I think we're going to win this week. Cam Newton's very talented. He might do some damage throwing and running, but like you said, overall, I think Eli's going to pass for easily 300 yards, and none of it's going to be, you know, fourth quarter when the game's, you know, when they're out of reach or when they're trying to come back. So this will be our first win, and we'll even have somewhat of a running game. So I'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
All right, Andrew, thanks so much for the phone call. When you look at the two opposing quarterbacks against Carolina in the first couple of weeks, it's not as if they had a tremendous amount of success through the air. Now, granted, the Carolina secondary was in better shape the first 2 weeks, so I get Andrew's point that now with them banged up, Eli Manning should have more success. But Russell Wilson, he did throw for 320 yards, but he did not look good at times. He was pressured more often than not. You know, they had to rely on the running game late, and if it wasn't for D'Angelo Williams' late fumble in the red zone, Carolina's probably winning that game. And then you look at the Buffalo game, Carolina has an opportunity late to really close the door. Luke Kuechly gets an interception. He's called for defensive pass interference, and that opened the door for Buffalo to continue that drive.
They let E.J. Manuel go 80 yards in 2 minutes with no timeouts to win that game. So while their overall numbers are good, there are some pieces of facts and information and data there, such as that final drive by the Bills that tells you there are some weaknesses. Remember, that drive at the end of the game came after a lot of the corners got hurt in that game, too. So that might be a good taste of what the Giants might be facing on Sunday.
You have to take advantage of a team's weaknesses, as we laid out.
201-939-4513. Randy's in Texas. Randy, what's going on, pal?
Good morning, my Brooklyn brothers.
Hey, what's up, Brian?
I got a kick out of last week when you got upset with a caller. I said that Brooklyn's coming out of you.
It was. The Brooklyn was pouring out of my veins, Randy.
And Lance loved it. But real quick, I want to say with the offensive line issues and Eli getting hit, I would love to see us shorten up our passing game. Every now and then, I know we like the big plays, and I love them too, but maybe shorten it up every now and then. I saw a couple plays this weekend where they dumped off to the running back out of the backfield. He scores, run for 20, 30 yards, and we got a guy who can do that. Maybe shorten it up, then hit the big play when we have to. You know, I was just wondering if we can – I don't know why we don't do more of that. And then I want to touch on Pugh. You know, I don't hear much of him, so I think that's a good thing. We don't hear much about the offensive lineman. I think he's doing well. I'd like to elaborate on that. And I want to say I'm so happy for TT. He's doing a great job. I'm happy for him.
I appreciate the call, Randy. Yeah, Terrell Thomas is doing an excellent job. We agree. And I forget who on Twitter brought this up last week about trying to use the short passing game a little bit more, especially considering how they've had trouble protecting Eli Manning on some of those deeper 5 and 7 step drops. And I honestly think it's probably a good idea. And we talked about this a little bit end of last season when they could have utilized the running backs, utilized Martellus Bennett a little bit more on the short stuff instead of constantly trying to force the ball downfield. And look, I'm in favor of the big down-the-field passing game. These dink-and-dunk offenses drive me absolutely off the wall because I don't think it's the proper utilization of skills and resources when you got big-play wide receivers. It's stupid. So you got to try to go down the field. However, you have to be able to make that decision and be more willing to maybe take that 6 or 7 yard gain over the middle to the running back or the tight end rather than throwing it down the field in what's maybe a 15 to 20% chance of making a play when you can get 80, 90% chance you're going to get that 6 or 7 yards.
And especially when you're seeing pressure, sometimes the best decision Eli Manning can make is dump it off to the running backs. And you're right, John. We had this conversation more often than not last season, and that was basically because Akeem Nicks was banged up. So they didn't have that element deep. So the next best thing is to use the short passes. This season, they have everybody healthy in the receiving core, but the problem is the offensive line hasn't been consistent enough in pass protection. So I don't see a problem either in utilizing the running backs more and more. Considering you can't get much on the ground, it sure wouldn't hurt to just set them up and let them run out in open space. David Wilson has the capabilities of doing that. I would even go so far to say Brandon Jacobs has the capabilities to do that in open space if you get him involved.
Lance's favorite horse and buggy play there from about 3 years ago.
Hey, I'll dial it up. I'll draw it up. You name it. They can implement it.
201-939-4513. John's down in Florida. John, what's going on, pal?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing well.
Got two things. You kind of brought up or touched on it real quick about Kiwi and how we really haven't heard much from him. Just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on if putting him back in his original position on the line is the best choice. I mean, with our linebackers not, you know, really standing out right now, we have enough people to rotate through the line if we should kind of put him back.
Now, here's the problem, though, John. He wasn't playing well at linebacker last year either. That's one of the reasons they moved him back to defensive line, to give him more of an opportunity to make plays. I think two games is probably a little bit quick to pull the plug. I think you got to give it a few more. I understand where you're coming from. The linebacker is a weak. You want to strengthen that position, and I don't disagree with that theory at all. However, I believe you have to stick with this for a few more weeks and hope he can get something going. Because you know how it works sometimes with these defensive linemen. Sacks and pressures can come in bunches. And maybe he just needs to, you know, find that extra gear in week number three. But you're right. He's been quiet, and I want to see more from him.
Yeah, that and the other thing is I totally agree on the short passes. And I think I remember the play you guys were talking about with Brandon Jacobs, the play-action little boot wheel out to the sideline.
Yep.
For a big gain. Yeah, we need to see more of that. And the other play that I used to see a lot back when Hakeem first started is when he was, you know, off the line a little bit, far out, and Eli quick pass straight to him without him moving, and he seemed to be able to use that play to make good yards every time. I remember the Kansas City game, like I think it was like his second or third year, where he killed that play and just made something out of nothing.
I think that's something they'll try to at least implement or turn back to. I think they just need to get back on the same page. There is a little something missing, you can make the argument, with Eli Manning and Akeem Nicks, and part of that is because you don't have a lot of balance on the offense. So sometimes, you know, Manning will overthrow Nicks, put a little too much mustard on the pass, and certainly appreciate the phone call, Josh. So as they get more balance in this offense, I think that's also going to help the passing game because, let's be honest, Eli Manning's been able to throw the football left and right, but there's room for improvement even in the passing game. It's not as if everything's clicking on all angles and all cylinders.
Well, when you have seven turnovers and all these interceptions, clearly everything's not clicking. It's not clicking when Eli's on his back every other play with the offensive line being unable to protect him consistently. And, frankly, we've seen Eli make some bad throws. I mean, that throw to Hakeem Nicks was a bad one. The throw on the screen pass that got picked in week one was a bad one. Airmailed Reuben Randall. That pass got brought back the other way. So clearly everything isn't clicking. They've been good. They've been solid. You've seen the potential of explosiveness in high-powered offense, but it hasn't been consistent, and I think that's really the important thing you got to take a look
and
at.
And Brandon Myers is another weapon I throw into the conversation, is somebody that I think they can even get more out of moving forward.
And Kevin Gobry talked about it today, that the Panthers generally play a pretty conservative defense. You'll see a lot of two safety deep, a lot of two deep, a lot of cover two, and that means the Giants are going to have to be willing to take what the Panthers give them here. They can't be forcing the ball deep down the field, and you have two safeties playing deep back there. You're going to have to take that 10-yard dig. You're going to have to take that 8-yard hitch. You're going to have to take that little post, that little mini slant, that post, that little skinny post. Whatever you can get, because the Panthers' defense is designed so they do not give up big plays.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing, John.
No.
You know what? Putting together a lengthy drive to keep your defense off the field, getting some momentum on offense, that's something we have yet to see in the first two games.
I believe, I don't have it in front of me. I have it written down in my notebook, which I don't have here. I believe the Giants are the only team in football that does not have a offensive drive of 10 plays or more this year.
There you go.
I believe that was the stat, if I remember right.
I'll put that on the checklist because that's something I think they could definitely use.
And they should be able to do against Carolina, again, if that offensive line can deal with that Carolina front seven. 201-939-4513. Joshua is in Colorado. Joshua, good morning.
Yes, guys. What is wrong with Eli? I mean, he has not been playing good all. I mean, he hadn't played good in the preseason. What do you think it is?
Look, Eli hasn't been sharp, and he's a guy, Joshua, and I think you know this from watching the Giants, where he is a bit streaky. He'll go through a few games where he's very good, then he'll have a couple games where maybe his mechanics don't look great and he's a little inaccurate. But like Lance and I have said this week, a lot of this has to do with the situation and circumstances he's been placed in. A lot of times coming from behind, getting no help from the running game. You can't use play action. You can't run screens and draws to keep the pass rush honest on the other team. So he's been forced to throw the ball nearly 90 times in two games. And when you put the ball up in the air and you have to throw it down the field in order to make comebacks, you're going to have mistakes. Now, that's not an excuse. He has to be more careful with the football. He has to make better throws. But I think it's in a lot of ways it's performance by other people on the team that have almost forced Eli into a lot of these mistakes.
Do you think that the lack of a running game is just not that they can't run? I mean, they don't want to run the get ball. It's just that maybe that these offensive linemen that they're getting out of college just don't know how to pass the run block. I mean, because all the colleges are running this spread offense.
But they have a lot of veterans on this offensive line. I understand where you're coming from. Other than Justin Pugh, these guys have been in the NFL for a couple of years, so they've had time to develop as run blockers.
Though you could make the argument that if some of these guys they drafted developed a little bit better, whether you're talking about Mitch Petras, who's no longer with the team, whether you're talking about James Brewer, whether you're talking about Brandon Mosley, you were both fourth-round picks. You draft an offensive lineman in the fourth round, you need to get production for them. The Giants haven't so far. If those guys could produce a little bit more, maybe they could replace some of the guys that aren't as effective.
And meaning move people in and out of the lineup. However, that also creates the obstacles of not having continuity with your offense.
Well,
lineup.
Unless they beat them out in training camp, then all of a sudden they've been there for 3 or 4 weeks. Unfortunately, the guys behind the veterans haven't played well enough to claim those jobs.
So you don't have the depth and you don't have the competition that you had maybe in years past.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, appreciate the call, Josh. Thanks a lot. 201-939-4513. And look, that's been a problem. What offensive linemen have the Giants really developed with low-round picks over the last 3 or 4 years? Matt McCants, I mean, he's not on the team anymore. Mitch Petras, not on the team anymore. James Brewer, he was given every opportunity to win a spot this year. Wasn't able to do it. Brandon Mosley, IR in his first year of a fourth-round pick. Again, had an opportunity this year to make some noise, maybe show you something. He was fine, but didn't do enough to earn a starting
job. And
now
he's hurt again.
And you can throw in Jim Cordell. And he missed practice yesterday. You mentioned Mosley with that back injury. So the Giants have not been able to take these low-round offensive line picks and turn them into players. And in the NFL, if you pick an interior lineman specifically, tackle's a little bit tougher sometimes. Right tackles you can, left tackles usually not. If you can pick these interior linemen in the middle of the rounds of the draft, you have to turn them around into starters eventually. That's where you're going to get your offensive linemen. Look what the Giants did when they had their great offensive line. Kareem McKenzie was a UFA, all right? But then you had David Deal, mid-round pick. Sean O'Hara got him from Cleveland where he was a late-round pick. He was a seventh-round pick, if I recall. Richie Seibert, who was a nobody, and they turned him into a starring offensive lineman. And then, of course, you had Chris Knee, who was a second-round pick. Will Beatty's a second-round pick as well. So they were able to turn these low-round draft picks or undrafted players into starters. And the last 5 years, they haven't been able to do that.
I believe Sean O'Hara may have been undrafted, if I'm correct.
It was either seventh or undrafted. He was undrafted. Yeah. By the Browns, by the way, not by the Giants.
But still, a player that has certainly worked his way up in the Giants, then took what he did in Cleveland and tried to hopefully hone his skills and improve. You're right. They haven't done that in years past.
201-939-4513. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing well, Len.
Are you going to go down to Charlotte to watch this game? I can't imagine it's that long of a drive between...
I wish I could. I had heavy babysitting responsibility this weekend with the grandkids, but I'll tell you this, and this is the first time in a long time I'm going to have to go to a sports bar. It's just not on down here. But
I was going to say, Len...
I'll see the game. I'll sneak away for 3 hours.
Len is going to be distracted by the kids. I'm a little worried about your football viewing experience here, Len.
Well, I'm leaving them behind. I'm heading to the sports bar. I'm not going to bring them. I'll have my 3.5 hours to watch the Giants win the game. Now, I may be showing my Giants bias here, but I think we're going to win on Sunday. And let me give you a couple of reasons why I think that. So you guys have alluded to this already. Look, I simply think, on paper, we're putting better players on the field.
Yeah.
Than Carolina. I think we're putting a better coaching staff on the sidelines than in Carolina.
I don't disagree with that either.
I think from the standpoint of where we are with injuries, listen, I think this is the healthiest we have been since the year started 8 weeks ago. We may be right now one of the healthiest teams in the NFL. Now, I'm assuming that Boss, Snee, Heinoski, even JPP, and those are four, you know, important players, that the rust is beginning to come off. And we're going to see better play this weekend from those guys.
You better.
You know, you put that all together, and I see, you know, 30-17. I think the Giants can win this game. We'll be 1-2. I am a little concerned about some things, if you give me just, you know, 30 more seconds here.
Sure.
You know, if we get into this game and JPP just isn't getting there and looks like he doesn't want to get there for whatever the reason, Kiwi's been for especially last week. I mean, the guy was invisible. You know, he's invisible. Slide Jenkins out, you know, to end. Let JPP come in on, you know, passing, what we consider to be passing downs. Get him off the field on those run plays. Turn Kiwi into a two-down defensive lineman. Okay, let's hope the strength is still playing the run. Let's get Tratto on the field. Generate a little pass rush.
Len, in fairness, if you move Colin Jenkins to defensive end, you're not going to have any room for Justin Tratto.
Listen. Tuck has played the run well. I'm talking about third down, passing downs. I mean, you know, I'm not. I know these are sound like desperate moves, but I mean, we got to be thinking about a way to generate a pass rush. Now, you know, anything to get that pass rush to put some pressure on this quarterback. If Snee and Boss look like they're still, and I'm going to think positive here, still a little rusty, hey, let's get him off the field. I mean, that was ridiculous last week. I'm hoping it's because the rust is still on, and it's not that their skills have diminished to the point where they can't play anymore in this league. But I mean, Cordell can't be any worse than David Boss was last week. I mean, put him in the game. If Mosley is well, and I understand he was on the injury list now, I mean, get him on the field as well.
Len, hold on. I mean, Jim Cordell in the preseason, they tried to play him against the Jets, and he got destroyed.
Did Boss play any better on Sunday?
Yes, he did. In my opinion, I think he did. And he's coming off in the injury. You know David Boss has a higher ceiling than Jim Cordell at this point.
Len, plus their biggest issue has been moving guys in and out of the offensive line. Now you're recommending that they do that all over again. Clearly, you may need a week or two till everybody gets a feel for one another. So I don't know if that's necessarily the best game plan.
Okay, and again, I'm not saying this is what we do on the first play of the game. I'm just suggesting if we get into this game and we get into this second half, the running game isn't clicking, and it looks like Snee and Boss. I mean, nobody pulls well on this team. Who's our best pulling player? We don't have anybody who can pull.
If your point is the offensive line looks like it's springing holes into the second half and Eli's on his back and you can't run the ball at all, would I be opposed to maybe making a couple switches? I would not be against that.
Okay. And that's where I was going with this. Now, and again, I know that sounds desperate, but we're in the second half of the third game. And again, as I said in the beginning, and then I'll get off the phone. I think we're going to win this game. And I think part of my rationale is, you know, it's like the third preseason game now for Boss and for Snee and for JPP and for Heinoski. And I'm looking for improvement there, enough improvement that the Giants win this game 30-17. And I hope next week we're talking about a big win. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
You got it, Len. Thanks so much. And I think he brings up a fair point. I agree with Len that these guys have to get their legs back underneath them. There's rust. A lot of them haven't had much action in the preseason. You would assume that as they get into week four and week five, Heinoski's going to start to look like Heinoski, JPP, and the list goes on and on. But the level of patience, I think, is running out because you can't afford to lose another game or two. You need to start clicking. You need to start gaining some momentum. So you hope that is brought to the forefront this week against the Carolina team that on paper looks like a favorable matchup, and perhaps they can take advantage of this team. But remember, Carolina runs the football very well, and their offensive line is no picnic and no joke. So that doesn't mean that it's going to be open season for JPP and company. They're going to have to earn it this week. They're going to have to win their individual battles.
And not only do they run the ball well, they have a quarterback that can not only run it and get outside the pocket and scramble, but also break tackles. This defensive line had trouble getting Peyton Manning to the ground last week, and Cam Newton might be the best combination of size and speed and strength of any quarterback in the league. So he's not an easy guy to bring down, and you can't quite pin your ears back and go after the quarterback quite as much when you have a scrambler like Newton, because you also have to contain him. You don't want him getting outside and running around a lot. So that could also keep that Giants defensive line a little bit honest as well.
Well, the key to me in this game, and I know we're probably going to get into it a little bit later on, John, if the Giants secondary shows the type of aggressiveness that it did in these first two games, Carolina, outside of Steve Smith and Greg Olsen, does not have a third option. If they can lock down this receiving core, that's going to put a lot of pressure on the Carolina run game, and I think that could play well into the hands of the front seven.
201-939-4513, no doubt about it. Ed is in Houston. Ed, what's going on?
Good morning, guys. About 3 weeks into the exhibition season, I called you and I asked you about a specific player.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was you specifically. And the answer I got was the Giants know what they have in this guy, and they're keeping him under the blanket, so to speak, and then he would debut again to Dallas probably. Right now I'm going to ask you the same question I asked after week three of the exhibition season. Where is Lewis Murphy? They're starting Jernigan ahead of him.
Well, I can tell you who answered that question that way. That was Paul Dottino, because that was his theory the entire preseason about Lewis Murphy. And the point I kind of made all preseason is that I was worried about Lewis Murphy because he didn't show much in practice. He didn't show anything in the games. And so far in the regular season, he's been absolutely silent. He runs a good 40 time. I have, quite frankly, in my opinion, and look, I'm a layman looking from the sideline. I'm not a scout or anything like that. I have not seen that speed translate to the field. I haven't seen him get behind defenders in practice. I haven't seen him get behind defenders during games. And quite frankly, with Brandon Myers and the three other great wide receivers, you know who they are, Randall, Cruz, and Nix, I don't think there's a whole lot of footballs to go around to get to Lewis Murphy Jr., to be quite honest with you. I know a lot of Giants fans have high hopes for him, but I think it might be time to temper some of those hopes. I don't think he's going to be that big a part of the offense this year.
So do you think then they're still going to continue to start Jernigan? Because he had his chance last week, and I think it was Cromartie just went right over the top of him and knocked the ball out. I wouldn't think that would happen with Murphy.
But, Ed, you know what you have to ask yourself? On paper right now, if you looked at all of the Giants' issues, as what John said, is it needing a receiver to stretch the field at this point? Is that priority number one? If you made a laundry list of all of the Giants' issues after two games, do you really think Lewis Murphy is the difference maker at this point? Is that what they're in desperate need of? Because I wouldn't put that at the top.
And by the way, Lewis Murphy has been on the field last week when I believe it was, or 2 weeks ago when Nix went out very briefly with that was last week, with the dislocated finger. It was Lewis Murphy that came in as that second wide receiver. He's gotten snaps. He just hasn't gotten many looks.
I know the play you're talking about, but if I remember correctly, Eli never even looked to his right to look at him. I think that was the play you went to Jernigan that was incomplete.
I mean, Eli Manning's made some big plays to Victor Cruz down the field. Akeem Nix has been involved. I know Lewis Murphy, it would be nice to have him in the mix. He would add another dimension. But once again, I think they have that element. They're not missing the big play down the field. They're missing consistency up front at the line of scrimmage, and Murphy doesn't help in that regard.
And the Giants, quite frankly, don't use four wide receivers that much. They like to have the running back in the backfield to protect the quarterback. They like having Brandon Myers in the field, especially in passing situations. Why wouldn't you? The guy has good hands. He works the middle of the field. Then they have their top three wide receivers. So there are your five skill position guys. And I'm not sure who you take off the field in that situation in order to get Lewis Murphy on.
Well, maybe Jernigan in certain situations, but
usually Jernigan's not on the field either. Usually your skill positions on the field at any given time are David Wilson, and these are in passing situations. You got David Wilson at running back, Brandon Myers at tight end, and then you have your three wide receivers, Cruz, Nix, and of course Reuben Randall. One of those guys would have to be off the field in order to get Lewis Murphy on the field.
Yeah, I understand. It's a matter of numbers. One other question.
Sure.
Early in the year, last year, the Giants had a really good sideline pass play. You remember when they threw the back shoulder in Nix?
Yeah.
They used that play a lot in the first half last year, and then the first half of last season. And then it just sort of went away, and I haven't seen one of those this year yet. And it just seemed to be so successful. I realized it was a timing pattern, but he and Nix had that down to a science, and it was like a free play.
Well, that back shoulder catch is, Ed, is generally used against man-to-man defense. And the way that the play works is that the defender's playing man-to-man. He has his back turned to the quarterback. He's looking at the wide receiver. So Eli Manning throws a little bit behind him. The wide receiver sees the football. The cornerback doesn't. So the wide receiver makes the catch before the cornerback can turn or turn around and get his eyes on the football. That's how that play works. Now, I didn't go back there and count all the plays, but I imagine early this year, one of the reasons you haven't seen it quite as much is because the Cowboys played a lot of zone against the Giants. They didn't play a ton of man-to-man. And maybe that was the case the second half of last year. I don't know for sure. I didn't track the plays, but that's one of my guesses. The other guess is that, at least last year when you mentioned it, Akeem Nix was banged up. So when a guy can't really cut on his knee and turn around to get to the ball on that back shoulder catch, maybe that inhibited his ability to run that route. Again, these are just theories. I don't know what the facts are, but I think those two are possibilities.
And what about Reuben Randall? I mean, he's getting a lot of single coverage. I would think a back shoulder with him would be good.
That's a fair point.
You do have to take advantage of your single coverage matchups, because I think that without a running game right now, you can't work play action in, because defenses are not going to get fooled by that. And appreciate the phone call, Ed. Thanks so much for weighing in. So if Reuben Randall has the favorable one-on-one, if Akeem Nix has the favorable one-on-one, Eli Manning eventually is going to have to take his fair share of chances with those matchups. But right now, it's hard to get this defense to basically come up to the line. Right now, if you're playing the Giants, you're saying to yourselves, we're going to lock in on the three receivers and the tight end because we're not respecting the Giants' running game. Once the Giants demand respect with their running game, I think that should open up the receiving game. It goes hand in hand. I mean, we're basically throwing out the basics here. But when you run 19 times for 23 yards, that's not scaring off the secondary. It's
nope.
Just not.
It's not bringing any safety to the line of scrimmage. You're not getting 8 men in the box. We said this last week. Why would anybody play a 4-3 base defense against the Giants with the way they're running the football? Run out nickel every time. They can't run it.
So that's why single coverage even at times is not happening more often than not with the type of defenses that the Giants are getting presented, because you can afford to double-team a Akeem Nix. You can afford to double-team a Victor Cruz right now if you play the Giants, because you're not scared about their running game. So you drop the safety back, you throw the extra slot corner back a little bit, and you have some wiggle room to disrupt those cross routes. How do you think the Broncos got a kick ball? Because there wasn't a lot of passing lanes for Eli Manning, because they knew that the Giants couldn't run the football.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Shakes down in Baltimore, Maryland. Shakes, what's going on?
What's going on, bud?
How are you?
I'm just doing good. I'm just doing good.
Shakes, you sound depressed here this morning.
Man, all week.
You told me Fridays you're getting excited day for the game on Sunday. Where's the excitement?
It's hard to be excited about this team right now. It's hard. It's hard. It just took me today to talk. For real.
I don't believe that for a second, by the way, just for the record.
Man, listen. I have not been a happy camper, really. Like, I've been going around here, and people just... That's the only thing they ask me is, are you okay? Are you all right?
Shakes, because you should follow Aaron Curry on Twitter. That may get your spirits back up.
What about him?
I said you should follow Aaron Curry on Twitter. Maybe that'll get your spirits back up. I know the affinity you show for Aaron Curry.
Good use of affinity.
Yes.
Oh, man. I was interested in the player, and when I seen him, he didn't know what he was doing.
What do you got, Shakes?
Good luck with him with that. Let me talk about some Giants football. First of all, I think that what we're missing is we need some fire on that defense. And I was talking to my friend about this yesterday, which I can finally talk about. But I was talking about this. When you're playing Peyton Manning, when you're playing quarterbacks like that, you're playing Tom Brady of the world, all that, you have to have a smart linebacker to counter with them quarterbacks. Only because I remember when we played Peyton a few years ago, we had Antonio Pierce. And every time that Peyton would check down or do anything that he would read our defense, Antonio Pierce and he did his check down.
Right.
And it was like they was playing chess. This team, there's no Antonio Pierce. There's nobody that is smart enough to play chess with Peyton Manning of the world. It's just, I come to that realization. So I think we're in trouble. I think we're in big trouble because of that. We need to, an offensive line. I think we should just, we just need to blow it up. We just need to blow it up. We need some maulers. Like I was saying Monday, or was it Tuesday? I don't remember. But we need some lunch pail guys. We need some hard-nosed, I'm going to knock you over guy. And I thought that was Herman. Is he on the practice squad? Yes, he is.
And, Shakes, you're right. And in the offseason, one of the big goals of this team, offensively and defensively, was to be more physical than your opponent. And I think you've seen that with the defensive tackles on that side of the ball, but I don't think you've seen it anywhere else.
Nope. It's in the inside. That's where I see it from. And I'm sorry. I know he played well last year, but I'm not big on him, and that's Booth. He just don't do it for me. Like, I want somebody to knock somebody out, punch him in the face. I want nasty offensive linemen. Booth is just technical. He's another deal, you know? He's another deal, maybe Beatty. You know, Beatty is technical. He's not no hard-nosed, tough guy.
They don't have a lot of maulers. You're right about that.
We don't, and that's what we need. We need some lunch pail guys in there. Reese, I know you've been doing a good job, but it's a lot that I don't really agree with you that you're doing. It's a lot. So, I mean, we just got to step it up, man. Hopefully I'm in a better mood next week. I hope so, because I can't take another week like this.
Shakes, I hope so, too. You sound a little depressed. Thanks for the call, man. Enjoy the game on Sunday, okay?
All right, man.
Shakes.
I feel for Shakes, man.
I mean,
you got to bring the energy on a Friday morning.
He's more depressed than, like, Tino was on Monday. Jeez.
He usually brings a lot of energy.
I know.
When he comes on. I mean, I could barely hear him through
that
phone line.
He was on the ledge.
Jeez.
All right, let's go our final call of the show. Our buddy Kendall is up in Canada calling us back. Kendall, good to hear from you again. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great, Kendall. What's up?
I followed Shakes last week as well. I'm a little bit more patient than the people from New York because I'm from Canada.
I believe that, Kendall. No doubt about it.
Like the sometimes when I listen, it's almost like it's Chicken Little, the sky is falling, and they want to blow everything up.
Yes, sir.
And start again. The thing that they got to remember, and everybody's got to keep in mind, is this is the first time since preseason that we've put the same O-line in the field.
True.
Right? Since preseason.
Yep.
And again, the strength of this team, like I said the last time I called, is Eli Manning and keeping him upright. My only concern is, this is a show-me weekend. So this weekend we'll find out, you know, like after 3 weeks, all the excuses are going to go away. If they lose to Carolina, like to me, this is a must-win. But because I love the Giants and because I'm not in New York, I have to actually go out and get other sources to read about them. But it's interesting, when I listen to you guys in the New York press, we're all high on the NFC East, we're all high on all the different teams, but when I go to the NFL.com, one of the articles this week was they called it the NFC Least, not the NFC East. So my question is, are we self-delusional about how good this division is? Are we self-delusional about how good this team is?
In terms of the division, I think the reason the NFC East, in my opinion, is tough is that you don't have any easy games. All four teams are generally pretty good. I mean, none of these teams are going to be walkovers. There's no Oakland Raiders in the division. There's no Jacksonville Jaguars in the division. There's no Bills or Jets in the division. I think both those teams are going to struggle this year. And there's not even a Carolina Panthers, in my opinion, in the division. Or St. Louis Rams, where, you know, it's going to be an easier game. So does the NFC East have top teams like, say, the Denver Broncos or Atlanta Falcons or Niners or Seahawks? No, probably not. I don't think any of those teams in the NFC East right now are probably on that elite level, but I do think they're all good, you know, 500-ish, 10-win, 9-win type of teams, and They also have a lot of skill position guys, which is why I think that they get a lot of attention. All the teams have a quarterback, depending on what you think of Michael Vick. They have a lot of good players at wide receiver, whether you're talking about Pierre Garçon, DeSean Jackson, Dez Bryant, who the Giants have. So there are stars in the NFC East, too. But all these teams do have flaws. So in that way, yes, the NFC East is not quite as good as other divisions, but I think they're more solid top to bottom.
So is this team as good as we, like, I mean, cause again, I listened to you all summer on podcast. I finally found you live. And that's why I started calling in. I used to scream at my iPhone on podcast. I was very happy that I could that I could actually call in. I mean, I was as pumped about this team before preseason as everyone else is. But again, 0-2, it's a long season. But if they don't win this weekend, I think that we are self-delusional, that this team is not as good as we think it is.
Well, it depends how good you thought it was before the season started.
Well, Kendall,
In reality, I thought they were a Super Bowl contender. But you can't be a Super Bowl contender at 0-3. What's the percentage? What's the percentage on? We've done the percentages on 0-2 teams. What's the percentage on 0-3?
It's bad.
It's got to be minuscule.
It's bad. And look, I think Kendall, the way you look at it is this: are the Giants going to be a 12-win team where they challenge for home field advantage throughout the playoffs? No, I don't think they're that team. And I think over the offseason, I think I was pretty clear that I didn't think they were going to be a 12 or 13-win team. I figured they'd max out at around 10 wins just because of the way the NFC East goes. And quite frankly, the way this Giants team has been inconsistent, I think the argument you make for why this team, Kendall, could be a Super Bowl contender is we've seen them, when they play their best football, they seem to be one of the better teams in football. The problem is they don't play their best football often enough. And I think we've seen the dark side of the Giants these first 2 weeks, where they haven't played their best football. I think they have it in to play a lot better, and if they play that best football at the right time, I think they could be a threat. But, again, do I put them in the regular season elite of NFL teams? No, I probably don't.
I think we should come up with a new name, not just for the red zone, but I think where the Giants struggle the most isn't just inside the 20-yard line. I'd like to know, and maybe you can look this up for the next show, mm-hmm. how many plays that we've had in the last year inside the 10-yard line.
Goal-to-go situations.
Where we settle for field goals. Not the 20-yard line, inside the 10-yard line. Like, there's so many, like, second down and goal, or five down and goal. Like, we just, it just gets frustrating. And I'm someone who's a little bit more patient.
They have had numerous issues. I think that's a fair point, Kendall. And thanks so much for the phone call. Appreciate you weighing in this morning. They've also had turnovers within the 10-yard line, I would point to. If you go back to that Cowboys game last season where Michael Boley returns the interception, he goes down at about the 1 or the 2, and then they fail to punch it in with Ahmad Bradshaw. I mean, you could go with a laundry list of examples where the Giants could have walked away with tons of touchdowns, specifically last season, and it was the Lawrence Tyne show.
And to be good and goal to go, you got to run the football, and they have not been able to do it.
And that's what I was going to get back to, John. Kendall's talking about, well, we thought the expectations for this team were sky high during the course of OTAs and training camp. But remember, when we were talking up this team, no one thought David Wilson was going to have some fumble issues right out of the gates.
Fair.
Nobody thought he was going to have some pass protection issues. We thought he improved in that regard to a certain degree. Nobody thought Andre Brown was going to be lost for the beginning of the season. Nobody thought the offensive line was going to be banged up during the course of the preseason where they wouldn't have the same five guys on the field. Nobody thought Brandon Myers would struggle with pass protection. Does anybody want me to add a couple of more factors to the list?
Throw Eli Manning 7 picks in there in 2 games. Who thought that was going to happen?
So there were so many unknown factors now in the conversation that weren't apparent in the months of July and August. That's why the expectations, I think, have fallen off.
We'll take 2 more calls, then we'll get to our picks. And I know we have a large contingent of fans out there in England. We get tweets of them a lot, and we have a caller from out there in Manchester, and that's Mike. We say good morning to him. Mike, I guess it's afternoon, early evening in Britain?
Well, it's afternoon here. It's early afternoon here. It is approximately 3:15.
How's it going, Mike?
Yeah, everything's all right, man. I was just calling because I'm watching my Giants here, and I'm just concerned about the collective bargaining agreement affecting our practice time. And do you think that has contributed to what has happened so far in the first 2 games?
Well, the practice time, I think, has definitely been a factor in terms of not having everybody on the field at the same time. Remember, what you do in practice, you hope would translate to the field in regular season games. So that definitely is a contributing factor. As they get more and more practice reps with one another, you should see better results.
And, Mike, I would be worried about this, too. Coach Coughlin and the players have both said these first 2 weeks that they've practiced pretty well. It just hasn't translated to the game.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, guys.
You got it. Thanks
hey,
so much.
Appreciate
for the call,
Mike. Yeah. Thanks so much, man. Good stuff. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Alan in Washington, D.C. Alan, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's going on, fellas, man? I see everybody so down, you know, and, you know, understandably so. But, you know, I'm very excited, man. I think this is just what we need. I really thought we were going to beat Dallas. I really didn't see that one coming. But six turnovers, you know, you can't beat anybody with six turnovers. But the Broncos, I had a feeling we were going to lose that game just because, you know, They're a really solid team right now. They're one of the best teams in the league. So I saw that one coming. But, you know, this is a must-win for us. You know, we cannot start 0-3. Carolina, they're hungry, too. You know, they're looking for a win, too. So, you know, I think the guy who's going to shine, hopefully, Hakeem Nicks, he's going back home. His first time, he really got to play. I know last season, he couldn't play against Carolina because he was still injured. So, you know, this is a little bit of a homecoming. He's a contract year. He's got to do what he's got to do. He's got to start helping out Victor Cruz. I mean, Victor Cruz is my dude, man, but he can't do it alone. And, you know, Eli's got to just be Eli, man. Just do what he does. Be clutch. You know, he can't force stuff. You know, and the stuff that he forces, you know, he's got to make better reads. He's got to make better decisions. You know, I understand that, you know, everybody's down on Wilson, but, man, it's time for Wilson to show what he can do, man. You got to put him on that punt return. You got to put him on the kickoff return. Give him something to get him going, you know, something, you know, to get him sparked up, a little fire to his running. Because, you know, you just throw him in the mix nonchalantly, he's going to play nonchalantly. You got to give him a little bit of spark, you know, a little bit of energy. I think he'll be all right for us against Carolina, you know. Cam is a big, big, strong dude, but he makes poor reads, just kind of like what Eli be doing. So I think it's going to be back and forth, a very explosive offense against another very explosive offense. If we keep Cam from running all over us, I think we have a good shot of winning this game. And I just want to give a shout-out to my man Shakes, man. Wake up, man. It's okay. The Blue Nation is behind us, man. Come on, man. We need energy now more than ever.
Thanks, Alan. Appreciate the call, bud.
See, the Giants faithful concerned about Shakes.
They're rallying around Shakes. We like that.
They want him to pull it together. And they want him to bring more energy on Fridays.
Hey,
I'll tell you that.
And look, Alan is always one of our more optimistic callers. And I think Eli's going to be okay. I really do. I mean, I'm not worried about him long term here in terms of this season. And he's not going to – I don't think he's going to have another 25 to 30 interception year like he had a couple years ago. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the wide receivers are too good. I think even if the offensive line doesn't improve, they'll adjust their passing game to take advantage of the short passing game. I think they want to give this offensive line a couple weeks to kind of gel to see what they have exactly. But, look, if Eli Mann is your big concern here, the Giants are in a lot more trouble than just the minor topics we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, listen, Eli Manning – 7 interceptions. Do you really think that trend is going to continue? I don't think anybody out there is going to say that he's going to continue to throw 3 or 4 a game. Or else he'll be setting some new records, not just within the Giants franchise, but within NFL history. It's bound to get better, as you mentioned, John, because the health of this team is improving. And you would hope that the running game improves. I mean, can it get any worse? 19 carries and 23 yards? Could it go further down?
Well, you hope the pass rush will improve. 0 sacks. You got to get better than that, right? You figure. I want to go through some of these tweets. We've got a ton of tweets during the show. Donald, who's one of our good tweeters, he's one of those guys on a ledge. He's a little panicky. This is some of his earlier tweets from earlier in the show. My first thought, sometimes change is not popular but needed. Tom Coughlin, love him, but Andy Reid is 3-0 in a new place in Kansas City. Then he points out Farrell, the Red Sox manager, first place Major League Baseball AL East. It's been the same players on this team as 07. Players too comfortable with coaching and schemes. Change is needed. I don't think this is on the coach. I think, you know, in some ways it's a talent issue. I think on the offensive line it's an age issue. I think on the defensive line it's JPP getting healthy. To me, Tom Coughlin is still not the problem with this team, Lance. I don't see it.
I think it bodes well for the Giants that they've had consistency with the coaching staff. And I'm not just talking about the head coach. I'm talking about the coordinators. I think it's been well documented throughout the NFL. You continue to change coordinators. You change coaches. It doesn't always translate right with positive results. So I would not be itching to pull out the hook at this point.
And by the way, Angel Gonzalez made a point on Twitter, and I should have said this at the start of the show, and I did a bad job. I didn't do it. But our app is down at the moment. We're trying to work out some technical issues with it with the provider. So is that up now? No, the app's back up. Never mind. Angel, it's there.
See, some other people within the organization are actually doing work.
He's on top of it.
It's nice.
Let's see. What else do we got here? Scott McGill, I thought this was a very pertinent tweet. If we can get pressure on Cam and run the football, we'll be fine. But he's not sure that they can do either. Both those things have been problems so far this year. So I thought that was a good point. Carolina, Doug Borenton may have a chip on their shoulder from that game last year. Hope the team's not going to take them lightly. Look, if the Giants were 2-0, I'd worry about that. But they're playing for their lives here. So are the Panthers. And the Panthers definitely have this game circled from last year. But I can't imagine this is a game where the Panthers are going to give more effort than the Giants, considering the 0-2 situation they're in.
Well, listen, both teams have plenty of factors to motivate them in this contest. But I think it gets back to what a lot of callers have echoed throughout the course of this show. You put Carolina, you put the Giants up against one another on paper, regardless of the fact that they're both 0-2, the Giants have a lot more talent that they can present on the football field. And usually in this league, talent overrides everything else. So at the end of the day, I think that gives the Giants a significant edge.
And here we go. I don't know if Fontana here is just trying to get under my skin or what. Key to victory, find Barton on IR and throw him the slant.
He's definitely trying to get to you.
Is he?
By the way, one of the callers just referred to the fact that Akiem Nicks was banged up in that Carolina game and that this could be an opportunity for him to make a statement. Remember, Ramsey's Barton had that huge game against Carolina last season when Nicks went down. That was his breakout game.
Very true.
I know you had that circled on your calendar, and also the fact that your highlight reel on your computer is the Ramsey's Barton catches from that Carolina game, because we know how amped up you get over history repeating itself.
Marwan Ali on our offensive line conversation. You know what the answer is regarding the O-line? Draft them high, rounds 1 and 2. Pugh and Beattie were drafted. And here's the problem. You can't draft first and second round picks for every offensive line position. Do you know why? Where are your skill position guys going to come from? You got to mix it up here. If you want to get a good corner, it's hard to get them late. You should be able to find interior offensive linemen in the middle rounds of the draft. Every NFL team does it. Giants need to do it too.
Or pull off a trade. I didn't mean to cut you off, John.
Yeah,
you know, there's other ways. You don't have to necessarily do it through the draft.
Cindy Faye Hamilton, do you think Demontre Moore will be in the game plan this Sunday? I think he'll get some reps here or there. I can't imagine he's going to play a whole lot. Marwan Ali, once again, thinking that I am rationalizing the strength of the NFC East. Again, I think you have a bunch of above average. Let me put it this way. I think right now you have a bunch of above average teams in the NFC East. I won't even put them to good or great. I think above average.
I think it's a down
year for the
division.
9-7, maybe 10-6.
9 wins should secure this division.
Right now it looks like 9 could, considering how it started. But would I be surprised if one team won 10 and took it home? I wouldn't be shocked by that.
If you get on a run, John, this season, you're in good shape of potentially running away with this division.
No question.
The first team that does that, that's what I'm waiting to see. I'm waiting to see a team go on a 3- or 4-game winning streak. The team that does that is going to be looking very pretty moving forward.
And Marwan Ali makes the good point, too. I didn't bring this up. I was too busy trying not to get upset. But Barton was released off of IR, so he's no longer with the team. Just FYI.
He's looking out for you.
Yeah, he is. He's just trying to keep me calm, and I appreciate that. Everybody, good job on the phones. Good job on Twitter. Lance, let's go to our picks this week. Last night, I had everybody pick the Philly-KC game ahead of time. I got that one wrong. I thought the Chiefs – let me go this way. I think the Chiefs are a better team. But I thought they would have a lot of trouble getting prepared for that very unique Eagles offense with just 2 or 3 days of preparation. I thought that would be the difference in the game. Turned out to be wrong. The Chiefs do a good job. The Eagles, in fact, showed a lot of the same holes that plagued them last year. Turnovers and defense unable to get the Chiefs off the field.
And how about offensive line issues?
Good point, too.
That plagued them, too, last year. Can't protect Michael Vick. Outside of LeSean McCoy's big runs here or there, they had trouble just getting any consistency, whether it be running the football or giving Michael Vick enough time to throw the football down the field. Listen, I understand that the nation was caught up with this Eagles offense after that Monday night clinic, but remember, that lasted one half. The Redskins made adjustments in the second half. The Chargers got over 500 yards against this Eagles defense, and also the Eagles offense wasn't nearly as explosive. Things have died down because, as I said, you see Chip Kelly once on film, you start to make adjustments.
Let me tell you, though, they can run the football. They can run the darn football. So LeSean McCoy's numbers yesterday, 7 yards a carry. They can run the football.
Well, that's because he had a number of big runs. But from down to down, they weren't having necessarily as much success.
Those count. And look, I think, and we talked about this, I think Chip Kelly's a good NFL coach. I think you put the right players in that system, he can succeed on the NFL level. Here's the problem. I don't think they have the right quarterback to run that system. Vic isn't accurate enough. He doesn't make quick enough decisions. And frankly, I think his best days are behind him. I don't think he's that great of a quarterback anymore. He had that one great year with Philly. Otherwise, he's had a pretty mediocre NFL career. Let's be honest about it. He hasn't been that good.
Well, he also hasn't been able to stay healthy.
And once again, hurting his ankle into the game last night. So I think Philly with Chip Kelly is going to be fine. I just think they need a different leader of that offense. And I think, I don't know about Nick Foles. I'll have to see him out there.
I was just going
to
throw that name out
there. We'll take a peek at him. Maybe he'll be better. I don't know. But I don't think Vic is the long-term answer. They need a real starting quarterback.
And that's a valid point, but I don't think Nick Foles is any better of a fit than Michael Vick is at this point.
Or Barkley at this point either. No, I think Vic is their best stopgap, but long-term, I don't think that's the answer.
No, they have to go in a different direction eventually.
All right, we'll stay in the NFC East for our next game, the Cowboys and the Rams. I think both of us like Dallas to bounce back. The Rams struggled last week against the Atlanta Falcons, and I think the Cowboys come back and they beat them after losing to the Kansas City Chiefs last night.
Oh, similar to Philadelphia, John, Dallas needs to get its offensive line back in check. They could not run the football against that Kansas City front seven.
They are protecting Tony Romo fairly well, though.
But I think they need that running game.
No, they do.
They need to have
no
balance.
Question, yeah. DeMarco Murray's been very quiet. And usually when he's healthy, the running game does well. But he is, I think he is, what, 60 yards rushing this year? Now, he had about 80 against the Giants. He had 20 last week. He probably has about 100
that
yards over two games.
Numbers.
But it's still not enough.
And the other thing is, Miles Austin and Jason Witten barely played a role in that game against Kansas City.
Well, I'll tell you what, we saw it last night. Those Chiefs corners, they play that tough man-to-man defense. They took everybody out of the game last night for Philadelphia. DeSean Jackson did very little. Riley Cooper did very little. I think their secondary is just, quite frankly, pretty darn good, and that's going to be a big challenge for the Giants in 2 weeks.
Well, they have good guys, as you mentioned, that can match up one-on-one.
Yeah.
You know, the Brandon Flowers of the world, and Dez had the best of him last week, but more often
than
not,
no one can cover Dez
one-on-one. He's going to have success against the average wide receiver in this league, and you have good safeties in Eric Berry, you have Dante Robinson.
Eric Berry's a heck of a player.
Sean Smith. I mean, these are veterans. They're not throwing out a bunch of rookies.
No, they're good players. The Chiefs could very well be a playoff team this year. And we talked about it in the offseason. A lot of people are poo-pooing that Chiefs game next week. Well, guess what?
Good use of poo-pooing.
Thank you. At Kansas City, they're 3-0. Kansas City is one of the toughest places to play in football. That is going to be a very tough game for the Giants, regardless of what happens this week against Carolina.
I actually wouldn't say it's good. I think they are a wild card team, to be honest with you, John. This is a 9-10 win Kansas City team
this
year.
Let me think. AFC. You figure the Patriots will come out of the West.
The East.
Who
knows? They may be able to play better in the West. They're not doing too well in
the East. You'll have the Texans. I feel like this. Only one team, I think, will come out of the AFC East. I'm guessing it's going to be the Patriots. Out of the AFC North, honestly.
Watch out for Miami, though.
Could be. No question of possibility. I think only the Bengals are going to come out of that AFC North. That's my feeling. I guess the Steelers or the Ravens maybe could try to make a run there. We'll see. Obviously, Cleveland, no. The Colts and the Texans are going to be factors in that AFC South. I don't think the Titans, the Jaguars are, especially not Jacksonville, have anything to worry about. And you look at the West, I think you're looking at the Chiefs, and you're looking at, of course, the Denver Broncos. So I think you'll have the Dolphins, maybe one of those teams from the North, the Colts and the Chiefs competing for those wild card spots.
That's how I see it play out as well. I think the AFC West and the AFC South have legitimate chances of getting two reps.
Yep.
The other two divisions, it's a one-team race.
I tend to agree. We'll see, though. I hate to count out the Steelers and the Ravens just because of their franchise's pedigree, but early returns this season for those two teams, not great. Next game on our list is one of those teams, the Baltimore Ravens taking on the Houston Texans. Is that game in Houston? I didn't write it down.
I believe that game is in Baltimore, if I'm correct. Let me actually take a quick look here. I don't remember where the location of this game is, but I'm bringing it up as we speak.
And I think this is an interesting
is in
game.
Baltimore.
It's
yes.
in Baltimore. And for that reason, I'm going to take the Ravens in this game. I think the Texans are a better team. They struggle away from home sometimes. And here's my issue with the Texans. I feel like their style and the way they play works well against teams that maybe aren't as good. But when you get against a talented team that can play a little bit like the Ravens, I think offensively the wheels fall off a little bit. I think Matt Schaub has issues moving the football through the air against better teams, and I realize the Ravens' defense is not what it used to be. It's not a top unit anymore. I get all that. But I think their offense is going to struggle. The one thing I worry about in this game is whether or not the Ravens can score on that Houston defense, which is still very, very good. I worry about that. I think the Baltimore Ravens eke this win out in a very low-scoring scenario, 16-13. 13-10, something like that.
That's a gutsy pick. Sure. Baltimore had trouble scoring on Cleveland's defense, John. So I think that's a valid concern. At the end of the day, Houston's actually shown some nice balance this season.
Hey, look, I like Houston. I think they're a good team. But in Baltimore, I'll give Baltimore the win here.
I mean, I
roll the dice.
I like the Texans in this game. Ben Tate has provided a nice insurance for Arian Foster. He had 9 carries for 93 yards. Granted, it was against the Titans, but he also had a pretty productive game against San Diego. And look at the Texans' passing game now. This has been my biggest concern for the Texans in seasons past. This is why I think they would be held back. But now you have Andre Johnson and you have DeAndre Hopkins, your rookie wide receiver. You've got somebody to take some attention away from Andre Johnson, and that's been opening up the field for Owen Daniels. So you no longer have just one option in this Texans passing game. It's a multidimensional offense. That's why I think Houston's come a long way, and I think they're going to be right at the center of Super Bowl contention this season with the likes of Denver.
No question about it. And I skipped over the Redskins and the Lions. That's obviously another game this week where the Redskins are trying to finally get on the board. And I can't imagine the Redskins at home are going to start this season 0-3. So I'm going to go Washington just to try to stay a factor in this NFC East. And I realize they're not playing well. I get all that. I think they'll beat Detroit. I know you're high in Detroit this year. I'm not as high in Detroit as you are. I like Washington.
I was disappointed that the Lions handed that game over to Arizona. Bad penalties in that contest. That's what held them back.
What the Lions do.
Indeed.
That's why they are the Detroit Lions.
They are back to their old ways. I like the Lions in this
game. Shocking.
I know it's very hard to believe that the Redskins could start 0-3, but John, give me some reason to have faith in this Washington defense. I'm really asking you, dig deep and give me one reason why I should be optimistic that this Redskins defense can stop anybody. I have not seen it. And Arakpo's back. Kerrigan's there.
This is me having nothing for you.
Well, you look at that secondary, my goodness.
Yeah, they're not very good. Then again, the Lions' offensive line isn't very good either. I think they could get to Stafford a little bit in this game.
And Reggie Bush is banged up, so
they don't have
some
a balance.
Concerns.
There's no balance at the run. Their defense is not. I could see Alfred Morris going for 130 in this game.
Who's going to stop Calvin Johnson?
Yeah, you put two guys on him, and you make everybody else beat you.
But you know what? I think the Lions have enough that they can beat you.
We'll find out. A little Brandon Pettigrew over the middle.
By the way, if Alfred Morris does run over 100 yards, I'll be very happy. I have him on multiple fantasy teams, so I can live with that as long as the Lions win the game.
I wonder why you got that little wry smile on your face. What's your wild card game this week, Lance? I think you probably haven't thought about this, so I'm kind of putting you on the spot here.
No, I actually sent you my picks. I'm just trying to recall my wild card game. My wild card game is New England over Tampa Bay. Two teams that have a lot of questions. No, don't give me that look here. New England's no gimme in this game. I completely disagree.
Over a touchdown favorite.
Wait a minute. Have the Patriots look like they're a touchdown favorite?
Almost as bad as DeTino picking the Broncos over the Oakland Raiders.
Don't get DeTino involved in this conversation.
By the way, Paul DeTino's a joke. These picks he sends in are a freaking joke. Picks the Broncos over the Raiders for his wild card game. Come on.
By the way, what time is he sending you those emails? Are they like 3:30 in the morning?
No, they're not. He actually sends them at reasonable times.
I would think they would after, you know, like a late night power walk or after he's staying up late counting the blitz packages for the Giants out there.
Well, he's taking the easy way out. I don't like it. I don't like it.
Those are pretty bad selections. But don't give me, you know, issues over the Patriots and the Bucks here. New England's look like a powerhouse to you after two games?
No, they have not.
They've got some issues. Tom Brady has not looked like he's on the same page with his receivers. Tampa Bay secondary is very good. You've got Darrell Revis. You have Deshaun Goldson. They're very good in terms of stopping the run. This is going to be a very tough challenge for New England. I think they're going to win this game, but it's going to be much closer than a touchdown. This could very well come down to a field goal. It's not going to be lopsided by any means.
Where am I going with my wild card game here? Maybe I'll go the game of the unimpressive quarterbacks. Then again, you know what? Maybe Hoyer will come up with something for the Browns. I'll lay off there. Where can I go for my wild card game here? Let's see. All right, how about this? I'm going to take a road team. A team that you like, I'm going to take the Atlanta Falcons to win in Miami against the Dolphins. You like that one?
That's a good game to pick. See, now you're gruesome.
Now, I can't use that as my upset special, can I?
No.
The Dolphins are technically favorites in that game. But
well,
I think
what's the spread in that? Is only, it like
only
1.5?
Point?
Yeah. Nah, you could do better than
nah,
that.
No, I agree. I'm with you.
Falcons over Dolphins. All right, I like that as a wild card.
What's your upset special?
My upset special, well, you're probably going to criticize me for this as well, but I got the Bills over the Jets.
That's not bad.
The
Bills,
Jets, believe
the
it or
road,
not, are the
okay.
favorite in that game.
I know they are. And the Bills are on the road. Rookie quarterback. I'm not gonna kill you for that one.
So what's your upset special?
I don't know. I'm gonna take.
Oh, you
a
haven't
look at
really thought
no,
this.
No, I was too
You're
busy.
The one that sent out the pick email.
I was tabulating the standings, and I still can't find Anita's picks from last week. I'm thinking she didn't send them.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Let's see. Upset special. Oh, how about this one? I think this is a pretty good upset special. The San Diego Chargers have actually played pretty good football this year. They've been strong in weeks 1 and 2. I haven't seen enough from Jake Locker to get me excited about the Tennessee Titans. The Titans are at home.
They're favored in that game?
3.5 points. I will pick the San Diego Chargers to go into Tennessee to beat the Tennessee Titans. How
I'll
about
that?
No,
that's a tough
bad.
Game to pick yeah. because both of those teams, you're right, have a lot of questions.
A little up and down.
I'm surprised, though, that Tennessee's favored in that game.
I will go. I think that what you know when you get spreads around 3.5, if it's a neutral field, it would be a pick'em game.
Yeah.
So they get the 3 points for being at home. So there you go. But those are our picks.
And what's the latest standings? Did you finish? I know you don't have everybody's picks.
I don't have any of
the
picks.
But let's just see what we have in the mix. Because I have a feeling that you're not patting yourself on the back so quickly.
Right now I'm at 6-6, which is unimpressive.
Wow.
Lance, just ahead of me.
Let's hear.
At 4-2.
Wait, overall?
I'm sorry.
No, come on.
I'm sorry. Hold on. I misspoke. Relax. At 7-5.
There we go.
Calm down.
That's what I like.
I'm at 6-6. Paul Dottino with his bogus picks last week, or is it 8-4? He's leading the way.
Oh, my God.
And he's tied with Dan Salomon, who's also at 8-4. Our webmaster, Nile, comes in at 5-7. And then Anita in week one was 3-3 again, like I'm missing her picks from last week. So that's where we sit right now, with Dottino with
game
his bogus picks
place.
And Salomon leading the way.
One game back.
Broncos over Raiders. Paul, come now. And he picked the Giants as his upset special, by the way. I'm going to have to talk to him about that one, too. Usually we don't pick the Giant games here. I have to make that clear to
See,
him.
This is what you need to do moving forward. If
What's
you
this?
Really want to take the bull by the horns, you need to make it clear that there's X amount of games that can't be selected for upset specials or wild
well,
cards.
Well, I felt
That's
like...
That's should be eliminated.
I felt like working on the honor system, people have enough respect for their fellow competitors where they wouldn't pick a team. That's, you know, a 2-touchdown favorite.
For example, nobody should be touching Seattle, Jacksonville,
no.
or Oakland, Denver, unless you're picking the underdog in that game. If you want to be bold and pick Jacksonville or Oakland, we'll allow that.
Outside of that, no. I'm even willing to say San Francisco at home against Indy. I mean, New Orleans at home against Arizona. I mean, come on. Unless you're picking the underdog again.
If you're picking the underdog, that's acceptable. Anything else, we're not having it.
Maybe I could make the rule. If there's ever a number that's higher than a touchdown, you can't pick that game.
Based on the spreads. Yeah. That's fair. I'm surprised, actually, we should have picked the Green Bay-Cincinnati game. That's one of the best matchups on paper this weekend.
And again, obviously, we're just picking winners here. We're not doing anything with the spread. We just use that to determine what our upset specials are and things of that nature. Lance, excellent job as always. What's your final thought for the game on Sunday, real quick?
Well, my final thought is not so much worrying about the keys to the game here. I mean, we've laid that out. We know they have a number of issues that they need to correct in terms of winning the battle at the line of scrimmage on both sides. But to me, this has got to be a game, and I'm going to rehash what I said right out of the gates at the start of this show. Momentum. Get a sustainable drive. Do something that you can build off of throughout the course of this game. You know, the Giants have not been very strong at the start of these contests. What did they do against the Cowboys? They had an interception on their very first play. What did they do against the Broncos? They weren't able to capitalize off of that fumble.
Yep.
And make Denver pay. Go out there, make an early statement, and then that hopefully sets the tone moving forward. That, to me, is the most crucial thing that they need to do. Forget getting caught up in all these keys.
Two things for me. One, if this comes down to talent, the Giants are going to win this football game, okay? So in that respect, for me, for the Giants, it's going to come down to mistakes. If the Giants don't make mistakes, they should win this football game. And I don't think this is going to be a game of big plays. I think you're finally going to see a game where you're going to get long, sustained drives by both teams. The Panthers are a pretty conservative team. They'll take their chances with Steve Smith. But otherwise, Mike Shula, he's a new offensive coordinator replacing Chudzinski from last year. He's a much more conservative guy. Traditional running game. Not as much read options as we've seen in the past. You're going to see Cam Newton running off of passes, not necessarily design runs. Dave Gettleman doesn't want his quarterback getting the you-know-what beat out of him. You're going to see fewer big plays. The Panthers play a lot of deep cover two, a lot of two deep. The Giants won't be able to make as many big plays down the field. I think you'll see more sustained drives, which is what you're talking about. And if the Giants play clean football, they'll win the football game. It's really, to me, that simple this week. And it is most weeks, but this week more so than ever, because I really think the Giants are the more talented football team.
You can't continue to pile up on those 10 turnovers. I think that probably summed it up best. Interceptions need to come down. You can't give free gifts to Carolina, because Carolina's offense is good enough that it will capitalize off of your mistakes. So the bottom line is they protect the football, like you said. They put sustainable drives together. They're going to put themselves in a position to win.
And the side stories, I think, too. I mean, how much does Dave Gettleman being there impact this game? How much does Hickson and Blackburn impact the game? How much does the fact the Panthers are probably very chippy over last year's loss impact their game and their effort? We'll see how those things, are they just secondary, tertiary stories that have no impact on the game, or are they really going to show up on Sunday? Sometimes they do. Most times they don't. We'll have to wait and see. Lance, excellent job this morning.
Look forward to chatting with you on Monday when we recap this thing.
No question about it. Preview report, it's Giants.com tomorrow. Paul DeTee and I will break down this matchup for a lot of X's and O's. Of course, make sure you tune in to WCBS 101.1 FM for the Giants pregame show, Coors Light Giants Game Day, at 11:30 on, again, 101.1 WCBS FM. Lance Meadow, Jeff Fiegels, Paul DeTino, and myself will have all the pregame, and then postgame afterwards as well. We'll be joined in progress, I believe, on WFAN. But make sure you tune in to 101.1 Love coverage from start to finish. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you next time right here on Giants.com. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the game.